Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
This week, we've heard a lot about what police reform could look like. But our next guest says there are limits to how reform can address the racism inherent in policing. Angela Davis is one of the most influential activists in the United States. Her work around issues of gender, race, class, and prisons has influenced social movements for generations. 40 years ago, Davis was a fugitive on the FBI's most wanted list. Once caught, she faced the death penalty in California and was later acquitted on all charges. She spent her life fighting to change the criminal justice system, and Angela Davis joins us now. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the program.
You've been an activist for almost half a century. Does this moment feel different for you?
You know, this moment does feel very different from anything I've experienced in the past. This is an extraordinary moment which has brought together a whole number of issues. Of course, I don't know whether it would have unfolded as it did if not for the terrible COVID-19 pandemic, which gave us the opportunity to collectively witness one of the most brutal examples of state violence. It's a moment when we are recognizing that it is important now to start the work that should have been done over 150 years ago in the immediate aftermath of slavery.
Mm-hmm. You were an active member of the Communist Party as well as the Black Panther Party, which J. Edgar Hoover called at the time the most dangerous threat to the nation. It was also one of the many organizations the FBI sought to disrupt under its counterintelligence program. I'm really thinking back to just a few years ago when Black Lives Matter was described as a terrorist organization. Do you see the parallels here? And do you think we're seeing a possible shift in that thinking?
Well, you know, I would say, first of all, that Black people have always organized. You know, whether we're talking about the Sunday schools during the era of slavery, where Black women taught children and adults how to read, you know, whether we're talking about the era of the rise of the Urban League and the NAACP, W.E.B. Du Bois, Ida B. Wells, mm-hmm. and her struggle against lynching. For hundreds of years, Black people have passed down this collective yearning for freedom from one generation to the next. We are doing now what should have been done in the aftermath of slavery.
Mm. I've heard you say we can't eradicate racism without first eradicating something you call racial capitalism. Can you explain racial capitalism?
The term racial capitalism is designed to encourage people to think about the ways in which capitalism and racism are interlinked. Slavery was the very foundation of the emergence of the Industrial Revolution. Capitalism has always taken advantage of and exacerbated existing racisms.
But what you're saying, too, is that it's also important, as many people are now taking a deeper look and being critical of their own roles in upholding racism, that they understand how capitalism is intertwined into that.
Yeah, and it's difficult, of course, because we live in a world that has been basically created by capitalism. I like to use the example of the attacks on immigrants that have emanated from this administration, and to point out that just as immigration and migration, particularly from the Central America and other parts of this region, but also in other parts of the world, that migration has been occasioned by the fact that people's home economies have been completely disrupted and often destroyed by the impact of capitalism. But I think that when we say that we are opposed to mass incarceration, we also have to be willing to say that we are opposed to the repressive and racist treatment of immigrants. I think that this more global perspective, which is offered by feminism, helps us to understand how our lives are intertwined with those of people all over the world.
Hmm. I want to talk to you a little bit about police departments and the prison system. So you've said that both of those systems are, quote, the most dramatic expression of structural racism, and that in order to fix it, we have to have an abolitionist imagination. Can you explain what you mean by this?
Well, yes. And when one raises a demand such as defund the police, people tend to think only about the negative process of getting rid of the bad institution, not about the way in which we can reimagine the meaning of public safety. And so I think now we can think about funding agencies and individuals and organizations that will help address issues of health, physical health. This is the opportunity for us to begin to reimagine the meaning of these states.
President Trump will be visiting Tulsa, Oklahoma tomorrow. He had originally planned to visit on Juneteenth, which, as we know, is today, the celebration of the end of slavery in Texas. This is significant because Tulsa is home to one of the worst acts of racist violence against Black people in American history. Your thoughts on the significance of this?
What is so exciting about the current moment is that people who have adopted a more progressive view of history and people who recognize that now we have to begin the process of rooting out racism in our country are increasingly representing the consensus. But what I do think is that we have to vote for ourselves and for our own ability to continue to engage in the activism and the conversations that will allow us to envision the possibility of a society that is free of racism and sexism and homophobia and transphobia. So I think that the next election is going to be about creating a framework that will allow those who are calling for the abolition of prisons as we know it to begin the hard work of creating new institutions.
Hmm. Does it feel surreal? Because as you mentioned, this has been a major topic of discussion for over 60 years now. You were a champion of this idea for a really long time. And now in a matter of 30 days, 60 days, we're now having true conversations where there's action.
Well, you know, it's very bizarre. It is kind of surreal. But I would also say that many of us have been making the point for a very long time that activists who are truly committed to changing the world should recognize that the work that we often do that receives no public recognition can eventually matter. Mm. And the protests and the upsurge in activism that has happened as a result of the catalytic impact of the police murder of George Floyd and the murders of Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and Tony McDade and Rayshard Brooks, the response would not have been what it has become if people had not been doing on the ground work. I'm just so happy that I have lived long enough to witness this moment. And I think that I see myself as witnessing this moment for all of those who lost their lives in the struggle over the decades.
I do want to ask you about that. You know, I mean, during the 60s and 70s, You saw several Black activists die at the hands of police and other things. And today, several Black activists who were active during and after the protests in Ferguson, Missouri, have died. And many more have chronicled their bouts with depression. You kind of spoke to what drives you, but really what has kept you going all of these years? And really what I hear from you is perhaps not a sense of optimism, but a sense of hope.
A sense of hope, yes. And, you know, I think ultimately we all have to be optimists, as no doubt so many Black people who were enslaved believed 200, 300 years ago that freedom was possible. And I think that younger activists have learned that it is important to address depression and trauma, and to do that within the context of our organizations and our movements, and not assume that people have an individual responsibility to take care of their mental health, but to make that a collective responsibility.
That's Angela Davis, scholar, educator, and activist. Angela, thank you so much for this conversation.
Absolutely. And thank you for inviting me to be on the program.